Thank you. Thanks, Sam, for your efforts there trying to get it back up. Okay. All right. We're good to go. Good evening. My name is Paula Reek, Mayor of Kingborough, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 7th of March, 2022. A warm welcome to everyone who will be watching this later when it goes up on YouTube. It is now 5:50 p.m. and I officially declare this meeting open, with apologies that we are late due to some technical difficulties that we've encountered tonight. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask Mr. Smee to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that we're meeting on today, and pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Ross. From our staff, we have the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr. Stevenson, the Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tyler Moore, the Manager of Works, Mr. Johnson, our Strategic Sport and Recreational Planner, Mr. Wade, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We also have apologies this evening from Councillor Gray. Moving now to page one, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 3, held on the 21st of February 2022, be confirmed as a true record. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you. That is passed unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday evening, the 28th of February, in relation to the Transform Kingston project. Turning now to page two, to declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest they would like to put forward? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A perceived conflict in item 16.3, review of sports ground, but due to my board membership on the Gymnastics Tasmania board, and the general manager has advised that I should, I'm able to stay in the room. So I'm declaring the interest, but I will stay in the room and vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I would wish to declare a conflict in an item in closed session, Kingston Park commercial tenancy lease, but I would not be leaving the room. And also, for transparency, I do have various children in various sporting clubs, which is relevant to a couple of the items we're discussing, but again, I won't be leaving the room.
Thank you. And Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have a conflict in both of those in the closed session, the tenancy lease and also item 16.3, due to having children involved in sporting clubs in Kingborough.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We move now to transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Staying now on page two, questions without notice from the public at the time, obviously the meeting is online, so there are no questions without notice from the public. Questions on notice from the public, and I just want to preface it by saying if there are members of the community who wish to submit a question on notice, they should send it to us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had three questions. The first is in relation to organisational development from Roger and Gail Tong, and an officer's response from Ms Hughes. The second one, turning on page three, is significant tree registry, also from Mr and Mrs Tong, and an officer's response from Dr Stevenson. And on page four, a question in relation to the Leslie Vale cricket ground from Mr Clark, and an officer's response from Mr Smee. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova, and then Gladewright, and then Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about the Kyoto Tramway and riding of dirt bikes or motorised trail bikes illegally. I have received reports about people, disturbing the peace by riding trail bikes or motorised dirt bikes on tracks and trails that they shouldn't. This was specifically about Kyoto, but I'm sure it happens elsewhere in the municipality. So my question is, what enforcement mechanisms are available to council to clamp down on that kind of disruptive behaviour? That's my question. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. Dr. Stevenson? Maybe?
No, I think this might be Mr. Smee. Thank you, Mayor. Through you, we have two mechanisms. One is by means of physical restraint, and that would be bollards at the entrances to tracks to prevent access for trail bikes, etc. And then the other, of course, is a infringement penalty if we can catch the offenders. But our ability to do that is limited due to often these events take place after hours, so we do rely on reports from adjoining neighbours and track users to advise when this behaviour is happening. But there are various offences associated with trail bike riding on our tracks, both in legislation and under our bylaws, and it's obviously something that we wish to curtail.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question briefly, Mayor, about that. Are there any plans for bollards or other potentially signage, if that works, around Kyoto? I guess it's two questions, actually. So firstly, do signs work in the experience of council officers? Are they a worthy route to go down? And secondly, are there plans for bollards at, as part of the strategy?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Our experience is that signs don't work. The type of people that want to ride on these tracks with trail bikes when they know it's not the right thing to do don't tend to pay any attention to signs. And yes, it is our intention to install bollards to ensure that we can keep such vehicles off the Kyoto Tramway track wherever possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smee. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I had Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question, please, regarding the roundabout on the Channel Highway, which I know is a state growth road. It's regarding the lane that exits the CBD of Kingston, and a lot of the cars are forming two lanes, one to turn left and one to go straight ahead. I just would like to represent quite a few of our community members who have safety concerns regarding what's happening informally there on that piece of road. And I remember this was also raised at the safety committee meeting when I was in attendance. I know it's a state growth road, so I know it's not our responsibility, but I was just wondering, because we're in touch more closely with our community and those concerns, what can we do to action some kind of change there? Do we need a council resolution for lobbying, or can someone do something in the background? I'm looking for some guidance on that one, please.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. I certainly agree with you. That's a very difficult intersection. And when I was deputy chair of the Road Safety Committee many years ago, it was being raised then, and it all became very real to me when I was teaching learner drivers, my children. That is a hairy thing. I'm just wondering, Mr. Smee, could you help us with that one, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. We have previously raised this matter with State Growth, and there's not sufficient width to formalise two lanes at that location. However, the informal forming of two lanes is very much preferred by the public in terms of the timeliness of being able to either go left or straight through the roundabout. So I know that there's two views on this, and one is that if people act sensibly, then it's safe. But there's the official response from State Growth is there's not room to formalise two lanes. So it would be actually reducing that down to one lane to stop two lanes forming, which then in turn may not be something that the public want.
Right. So what can we do from here? Can we request them to change it down to one lane if that's the only acceptable solution? If that's going to be safer?
Through you, Mayor, I think it's a matter that would require some community consultation, because I expect that the majority of people would want to see two lanes if that was possible, and I expect that that could be possible with some acquisition of land and widening of the lane and expenditure. So I guess my advice is that it's a State Growth matter, and if it's a issue that council wish to pursue, then a resolution to that effect would need to come forward.
Okay, thank you for the advice. Noted. I'll get on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Next I had Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question about the 30k an hour signs that have been put up in Woodbridge now. They look quite official. So the speed limit through Woodbridge is now 30 k's an hour. Considering the amount of time that we've tried very hard to get Snug down to 50 k's an hour, I'm just wondering why Woodbridge has been prioritised, and if there is anything we can do at all to once again encourage State Growth to look at the speed limit throughout Snug.
Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, the signs I saw in Woodbridge on the weekend looked temporary rather than permanent, but I would need to take that question on notice. I haven't had communication from State Growth on that matter.
Thank you. And my second question, when you're coming north from Kettering or from Woodbridge, approaching Kettering, there used to be a sign saying welcome to Kettering. That sign has now been missing for at least 3 weeks. Is there a reason for this, and is it going to be replaced?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we'd need to take that question on notice as well and investigate. I'm not aware that that sign's gone, but evidently it has.
It definitely has. I thought you might have seen it at the weekend, Mr. Smee, if you were down there.
Sorry, I wasn't looking for it.
Thank you, that's all.
Thank you. Any further questions without notice? I have a question for Mr. Johnson in relation to a priority listing for footpaths. Because we now have a footpath policy, I'm just wondering whether we're going to go through a process a bit like we did for hall upgrades and public toilet upgrades, where we actually analyse the situation with footpaths, where there are sections missing, sections that need to be repaired, and start to have them on a priority list so that when we come around to each CAPEX program that there is a sort of a clear indication of where we might go with that. Mr. Johnson, are you able to assist with that? I know I was speaking with Mr. Reeve about it, but he's not here this evening.
Through you, Mayor. I hope you can hear me there.
Thank you.
And Mr. Reeve has touched base with me with regards to this. So the footpath policy and nature strip guidelines are obviously a relatively new document, and the intention of that policy and those guidelines we'd have set some standards moving forward in terms of, you know, what we'd like to achieve into the future. So it is recognised that there's a number of locations that don't meet those targets, and it's also recognised that to meet those targets would require a very significant capital expenditure. So, for example, I think from a very quick desktop assessment, there's roughly 22 kilometres of roadway that wouldn't meet those aspirations. And in a lot of those instances, it's very challenging to build a footpath with the topography of the land, and also noting that there would be a number of residents that have probably spent a lot of time landscaping their nature strips. So there may be some community backlash about actually building those footpaths in those locations. But in saying that, we are committed to making a prioritised list of new footpaths based on a number of criteria. So that would be, you know, including cost, ease of installation, community need, expected use, safety, and the aesthetics of the area. So we are committed to develop that prioritisation list so that we can actually, start to see those into it and put that list into some of our future works.
Thank you. Thank you very much. If there are no further questions without notice, we'll keep moving on page 4 to questions on notice from councillors. Oh, sorry, Councillor Midgley, I beg your pardon. I didn't see your hand up.
I have two questions in closed session.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so questions on notice from councillors on page 4. There was a question in relation to the South Bereany National Park Management Plan that was submitted by Councillor Midgley, and there's a response from Dr. Stevenson. On page 5, sale of land at Pearl Place from Councillor Grace with an officer's response from Mr. Arnold. And also on page 5, COVID-19 data, a question on notice from Councillor Wass and an officer's response from Mr. Lee. The opening session of Council adjourns at 6:05 p.m. and the Planning Authority commences at 6:05 p.m. So we're now turning to page 6. With a recommendation on page 23, we're looking at DA 2021-651, a development application for upgrading of Dens Point Lane and associated works between Bruny Island Main Road and Chainage 115 at Dens Point Lane, North Bruny. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Westwood. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. As you've noted, what this DA is about, from the looks of this, it's been quite an ongoing DA with an application that was received to Council some time ago, and that then went to a tribunal that was appealed, and now it's up again in regards to the laneway. I did have a conversation with Tasha, Ms. Tyler Moore, this afternoon, noting that there was a lot of representations to that, and Ms. Tyler Moore actually gave some really interesting background in regards to perhaps why there is so many representations and a bit of a history. And Mayor, I thought it might be good to see if Ms. Tyler Moore would like to just speak so that councillors understand the significant history of this project and why perhaps there are quite a lot of representations that are very detailed and articulately represented as well.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, this application, there was a planning permit issued for a dwelling at this site some time ago, and it has changed hands since it was originally approved. The history some of the councillors would be familiar with. It was one that was recommended for approval but refused by councillors and got appealed at the tribunal, and a permit was granted. When they came back to do their building permit, it became apparent that they needed this modification of the road to meet the bushfire requirements, which weren't required back in the day when it was originally applied for. So that's how it's come about. The roadway that we're talking about is a shared roadway with a number of other landholders along that road, and as it directly impacts their access, it does affect them, but it's worth noting that the matter of the actual house, its approval, and beyond change 115 is not relevant to tonight's decision. That permit has been acted upon, and this only relates to at the start of that roadway.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore. And so just on that as well, I wondered, Mayor and other councillors, if perhaps the upgrading of the roadway as a concern to residents would mean that there could be a lot of traffic impact because we'd be seeing more pedestrians or vehicles perhaps accessing that roadway. And so I thought perhaps that could be a reason why, but Ms. Tyler Moore appeared that would be a concern that it could be utilised with more traffic and people utilising the roadway. So from the detailed report, from the number of responses that staff have responded to in regards to the different representations, I'm happy to support this.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there further speakers? No, not seeing any hands go up. If there are no further speakers, then I will put the recommendation as printed on page 23, moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is Councillors Street, Cordova, Gladewright, Bastone, Westwood, Fox, Wass, Midgley and Reet. And that is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority adjourns now and the open session of Council recommences at 6:10 p.m, which might be the quickest Planning Authority meeting that I think I've ever chaired or that I've been part of. So that's surprising. Moving now to page 39, petitions still being actioned at the time that the agenda was printed. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received either. Officers' reports to Council. We now move to the Planning Authority Delegations Policy 1.1A with a recommendation on page 40, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to reflect changes in delegation as part of the new team structure by including the position Team Leader Development Services in the delegation policy and altering delegation level for the coordinator statutory planning. So this seems to be all about efficiency. I understand that our planning staff are very, very busy, and so if this is going to help them out, then I think that's wonderful. I note that the key functions and delegations are the ability to sign off approvals as the planning authority where there are no representations made. So I think it's going to make life a lot easier. So moved.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. Are there any further speakers? Oh, very quiet this evening. Bastone, I can see, has got her hand up. And then Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is just regarding some time ago we had someone come and look at the way that the planning department was operating. I won't say an investigation, but a look at it. I'm just wondering, was this part of their recommendation or is this in addition to the recommendations, the 20 recommendations that we had at that time?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the report came back with some recommendations about changes to delegation, so that's in line with that recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next I had Councillor Bastone, you've still got your hand up. Councillor Cordova or Westwood, your hands have gone down. No, they're back up again. It's very confusing. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I did have my hand up, but I've put it back down because I wanted to make the same point as Councillor Bastone, that this was one of the recommendations that came out of that review, and very pleased to see that it will help streamline processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about trying to quantify the increase in capacity that this will give the council by having this extra delegation capacity given. So is there some way of quantifying, you know, how much more we expect to get through, or the improved time frames or anything like that? How are we going to measure that?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the question's probably a little away from the delegations. It's more about the structure, but I'm still happy to answer it. We expect that it will make quite a difference because instead of all the planners channelling their reports and letters through to the coordinator, it will now be split across those positions, so the team leader will still have a caseload and will have people to sign off for, whereas the coordinator doesn't have a caseload, but the coordinator has a lot more of other responsibilities, and it will give us the opportunity to do some of those other improvements that we've wanted to do for so long but never have capacity to do it. So to quantify it, it would be in the way of seeing the achievements occur over the year of the other improvements, because at the end of the day, we always get through 100% of the applications because we just quite simply have to. But hopefully staff won't be quite as stressed, and some of those timeframes will be improved.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to follow up to that, it says at item 8.1 that there is no anticipated risk associated with the changes proposed. I was just hoping that that might be elaborated on a bit. My assumption, just in a very broad sense, is when you change delegations, there's a risk of some things either falling through the cracks or, you know, communications issues when one person doesn't know what the other person is doing necessarily. Is it, I guess, the question is, how can we be sure that there is, in fact, no anticipated risk associated with the changes?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, there's always a risk with any of the officers that are signing anything off, me included, because the errors can be made. But we don't anticipate any further risk through this change, because the team leader statutory planning is qualified, has experience of in excess of 40 years, I think, and we always work collaboratively in the team. So if the team leader, as an example, is unfamiliar with something, it's very easy to approach others in the team, including myself and the coordinator of statutory planning, to make sure that the right decision is made. It's not closed book, it's not closed office, so it's always done together. So we feel that they're qualified, they have the experience, and there are always going to be checks and meetings to discuss the different delegations and the different learning of the different officers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers? If not, Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up?
No, thank you.
Thank you. I'll put the recommendation then. It's as printed on page 40. It was moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Gladewright, Bastone, Westwood, Street, Wass, Minchley and Reet. The motion is carried unanimously. We now move to page 61, Policy 6.6, Bonding of Works, with a recommendation on page 63. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Wass. Councillor Midgley. Can't hear you, Councillor Midgley.
Sorry.
All right.
This is an update as staff review policies, noting that this bond policy was to be updated, and so therefore there are... Sorry, I'm just going through it, and because it's not got their hand up, to see what changes were made. I'm so sorry about that, but while I'm looking for that one, so Ms. Tyler, I'm wondering, Mayor, if perhaps when I read through this, I needed to see like a bit of a, sounds funny, like a concrete example of the bond policy. So something in action where this has been utilised, just to get my head around actually what it really means in the big picture of things. So I'm wondering if Ms. Tyler Moore or other staff could perhaps give us an example of that, where it's utilised, please.
Sure. Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, some examples. This policy has been used for a long time. Most councils have a similar policy. It bonds works to a later time that may be damaged. So quite often things like footpaths or curbs and things like that might be damaged by the trucks that are going in and out of the sites. So it doesn't make sense to put it down and then have to replace it because it will need to be replaced to be transferred to council. Another example might be some of the stormwater treatments, because they get silted up when we're doing the works, and that is very expensive and costly, expensive and time cost as well, having to clean them out. And another one which has been added in that wasn't in there before was to do about the rehabilitation work. So often sites need to do rehabilitation when in a sensitive environment, sensitive area, and it might not be the right season. It makes no sense to plant young plants in the height of summer, as an example. So we may bond it to a more suitable time or for weed eradication. So it's not a given. Not everyone gets to use it. It's when it's appropriate, and it'll be determined by council officers when it's appropriate. But to date, we've always found it effective. We haven't had any gripes about the policy or how it works, so it's working well.
Thank you, Ms. Tallamore. Any further questions, councillor, or comments?
I haven't finished. So just further on that, so noting what Ms. Tallamore said in regards to planting vegetation and things like that in summer, does that bond policy then mean that they actually then do have to go and do that later on? So because they might have done it in the summer months, they still need to go and do the landscaping. Is that what holds them to that account?
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor. So as an example, some of that planting for these sorts of works is like a subdivision where they put new street trees in, or next to, say, a waterway where they do development and that caused damage during the construction, or it just was in very poor condition and should be rehabilitated before it's transferred to council's ownership and management, then the bond may be staged. So they might say, at the end of summer one, we'll return the bond if you've done what you're supposed to do and it's been checked. At the end of year two, we'll return the rest of the bond when we check. So we can stage it, we can make it relevant to different parts, or we can say, well, you do X, X and X type of works, and then the bond is released for that, but the other parts require a later bond release.
Thank you. So I noted that one, councillors, because I noted Spring Farm and Whitewater, some of the street trees that have been planted after a short time actually have died. So does that mean that they've still got that bond policy, they have to go back and plant them again at a more suitable time?
Ms. Tallamore.
I would need to actually look at the file for that one to see if that was bonded, but what occurs with subdivisions is that they undertake the works and then they get a sign-off that they've put it in, so the roads and the footpaths and the street trees, and then they go on to an on-maintenance period. So for 12 months, or a time stipulated by council, they must then maintain it. So in that 12 months, if the footpath fails or the road fails or the street trees fail, meaning they, you know, crack or break or the plants die, then they need to do that before council take on that asset. So council will go into another inspection and then say, well, no, there's a fault here and the drain's not working and that drain there cracked, so you must fix it all before you transfer it to council. Otherwise, they don't get their release, and that is bonded, but it's still in the same policy, but for different purposes. So we can do that, but after that 12-month period and council's taken on those street trees fail or anything else fails, then council needs to pick up the cost of those. So it is important we undertake those inspections well.
Right, thank you. That's very good to know. And just noting 4.3.2, there's a detailed list there of the other changes that have been made in the policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Next, I've got Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of quick questions. The first one about the threshold, the value. There's a couple of changes from my reading of it. So about driveway and other minor works for small-scale subdivisions, the value there is valued at less than $50,000. The general manager has absolute discretion. But then on another one, they've removed the threshold of $100,000 or greater for a deposit in an approved financial institution provided by the owner. My question is just about what are the changes in the threshold values, and does that mean we're going to be using this bonding policy more if the valuations are lower? So maybe just take us through what the various changes are in the valuations, $50,000 or $100,000.
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor. So the policy under the procedure section 4.1 changed slightly. So up to date, it was bonds for infrastructure works. And what we've done is we've split it to bonds for subdivision and other major development, so they're really big developments, and then it has the threshold in there just to the 100,000 because that's typically what it would be valued at. There was no point having the 0 to 50,000 because if they had smaller works, then you would use the Part B of the policy that is for that those smaller works, bonds for development other than subdivision. So it just really split it out to make it a bit clearer because it was it's changed over time how it works. And there used to be bonds taken for every crossover as well, which we no longer do. So it just enabled us to do that. But the bond amount is always 1.5 times what the total value of works are because there's other costs involved. Costs obviously go up and also there's administrative costs having to deal with those bonds.
Thank you. A final question is just about the difference between practical completion as opposed to final completion. So I'm looking here at completion of works 4.1.6. How would you describe the difference between practical completion and final completion?
It's Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the practical completion is the one before they before they go into the on maintenance. And the second is after we've checked that, after that 12-month period that I was explaining earlier.
Okay.
Thank you. We will actually be moving now to also provide formal certificates, not decorative ones, but just more formal certificates and improving our processes and communications with our clients on those sorts of works and make it very clear of other requirements which councils might be interested in. As an example, it will stipulate the expectations around what they're required to have clean and tidy. So it's not just about failing footpaths, but also that they must remove all graffiti from those assets before it's transferred to council.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the updated proposal. I have no issues at all with any of that. What I wanted to do was to correct the policy's wording because I think there's some gobbledygooks that needs to be changed to common English or plain English. In 5.1.1, application of Part A, it says the general manager may, at their discretion. Now, I know what they're trying to say. Why can't we just simply say the general manager may, upon request, or may, if requested, agree to it? Because it really is a gobbledygook statement. And to the person reading it, particularly of a low education, would not understand it.
Could you just give us that the clause number again, please?
Yes, it's on page 75. Under 5.11, application of Part A, 5.111, and I would suggest it should be general manager may, upon request, agree to a bond, etc., etc., etc.
Ms. Tullamore, do you have any thoughts on those proposed words there?
Through you, I apologise. I couldn't actually hear what Councillor was saying. Because the sound went funny. I think it happened to others there because they were...
Yeah. So, Councillor Wass, could you just repeat that for Ms. Tullamore, please?
Yes, yeah, she's got the 5.111.
Yes.
The general manager may, upon request, agree. So take out the words at their discretion and replace it with upon request.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have any particular concerns about that change. I would suggest, though I did hear the last part about less easy for the layperson to read. Typically, we would explain this and they would simply make their request, but it doesn't matter either way, it could be changed.
And likewise, on 5.2.1.1 on page 80, the same changing there. So that aligns them and makes them the same. That's bond for development other than subdivision. Everyone's got that?
Yeah.
Also, there's some grammar errors. Some words have been taken out of the old one, and, of course, words have just been inserted, but they haven't been changed. On page 76, under item 5.122, number 11, the owner has entered into a security agreement, not an.
Yeah.
Likewise, on page 77, 5.1.3.1, the an needs to be replaced by the letter A, followed by security agreement on the second line down.
Hang on, just, sorry, 5.1.3.1.
Yes, refusal request. It's got for an infrastructure works bond or an security agreement. Yeah, what I'm saying there, it should be a security agreement.
Yep.
I think, don't know whether there was one more or not. No, the other question I've got here is on page 78 under 5.14. Section 2 on page 78 up the top, we talk about required by the general manager from a bank financial institution. I believe the word bank can be struck out of it and it's no longer required. A bank is a financial institution and doesn't change the context whatsoever.
Yep, thank you.
That's all I wanted to say, Mayor. As I said, I do support the changes proposed, and we just needed some correcting and some wording.
Thank you, Councillor Wass. Are there any further contributions? Otherwise, Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? No? I'll put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 63. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please raise your hands. And that is Councillors Fox, Reet, Cordova, Gladewright, Bastone, Westwood, Midgley, Wass and Street. The motion is carried unanimously. Moving now to page 83, review of sports ground user fees with a recommendation on page 87. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to consider a review of sports ground user fees. There are a couple of things that stand out to me when I read the report. Firstly, Kingborough Council's policy of not charging fees is very much an anomaly in comparison to other councils. Secondly, from a financial perspective, the positive impact of a reasonable cost recovery turf maintenance strategy via the re-establishment of sports ground hire fees could be very significant over the medium to long term. The recommendation is that Council provide in-principle approval to the re-establishment of sports ground user fees in Kingborough, subject to presentation of a further report that details the strategy and logic behind the rates to be charged for hiring of sports grounds, together with the timing and phasing in of new fees and consultation to be undertaken with local sporting clubs and associations. I found the report to be very self-explanatory, so I look forward to hearing the discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I found this a very refreshing report, and I think it's very positive and a wonderful suggestion, and I look forward to the consultation. I'm just interested, though, if there is a time frame envisaged. There is no mention of when this is to happen. I'd like to be reassured that it's going to happen fairly quickly.
So, Mr. Smee.
Thank you. Yes, through you, Mayor. We'll get straight onto this. Mr. Wade is very much looking forward to engaging with the sporting community in relation to this matter. He's recently moved into his new role, and part of that role is getting to know all our clubs, so the consultation in relation to this can form part of
forming that relationship with the clubs.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do I further speakers? Councillor Wass, your hand is up. Is that from the previous discussion? Because it didn't go down. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. It was previous. I'll take it down.
Thank you. Okay, I've got Councillor Wass. Beg your pardon. Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also think this is a great initiative. It's something that has been talked about for a little while now, and certainly ensuring that we are having reasonable cost recovery for the cost to ratepayers of maintaining our indoor and outdoor sporting facilities, and ensuring that there is equity between what's contributed between indoor sports and outdoor sports. I know some of the clubs are aware that this review has been on the cards. I guess my preference would be that we didn't rush it too much. I think it is worth doing comprehensively with good stakeholder engagement, potentially something that a new council might like to consider after it is elected next year.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. I've got Councillor Midgley next.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks for putting this up. I think it's a bit of a bold move, considering that it hasn't been passed council previously, but I think it's definitely an important move that needs to happen. It needs to be discussed. And we have, as a council, sat and looked at the cost of the turf maintenance and ways that we can not place so much significant cost to council, but there's any movement there. And as Councillor Gladwright said, many councils have been doing this. Kingborough Council is more of a metropolitan council, and councils like the City of Hobart, which is a much larger council, have been doing this for over 20 years, and many other councils around Tasmania and Australia are definitely doing this. And it will be a bit of a change, but it's probably something that some of the clubs are aware that it would be coming. And I did have a discussion, as noted, I have children in sports. I did have a discussion with the Kingborough Lions, just a bit of a chat to let them know it was on the agenda. And in principle, they said they did support that, but of course, more conversation to be had in the engagement process. So, and I note that I don't expect us to fully recover the turf maintenance fees in regards to the user fees that we will be charging, that, you know, we'll probably step out in the future. A couple of questions I have. Will we take into account the local district and regional facilities? So say, for example, on Bruny Island, I'm sure we won't charge local clubs on Bruny Island. Perhaps, maybe we will, I don't know. But I'm just wondering, what are the thoughts around those sort of local, regional and district facilities that we have across Kingborough?
Yes, we'll certainly take into account the differentiation between those three levels of facilities that you spoke about. So absolutely, as every other council does as well.
Thank you. And I'm wondering, with the engagement, from my recollection, one of the things that I was a bit disappointed about with the Kingston Park plan was the actual transparency around the conversations with the different users. And so it would be great if are we following the engagement policy and procedures around how we then will be engaging with the clubs? And two, we'll be documenting the conversations that we do have with the many clubs across Kingborough. And will that documentation come to a council workshop prior to it going to a council meeting?
Through you, Mayor, that's, yes, we can basically do whatever we need to do in line with our communication engagement policy, and I've got plenty of time to do this, as has been mentioned, so I don't think we're talking about implementing fees within the next month or two, so we'll work through a process, and as Mr. Smee said, it's a great opportunity for me to consult with every sporting club that hires facilities in our community, so the process will be thorough, it'll be detailed, and it'll be reasonable.
Thank you. And I noted in the report, if it, you know, does go to the stage of implementation, noting that it wouldn't happen immediately, that it would be streamlined in regards to the process of implementing it over a couple of years so that clubs can actually plan for that. Am I correct in thinking that as well?
Through you, Mayor, we certainly wouldn't expect that we're going to seek a 100% cost recovery in year one. So it'll be I suggest it would be a staged process that we'd be, you know, reasonable all the way through the process. But as has already been mentioned, the inequality between indoor sports horrors and outdoor sports horrors is pretty significant. And so we'll work through that process, but we wouldn't, you know, I just keep using the word reasonable, fair and reasonable, and we'll work through that process.
Great, thank you. And just a point in regards to, I guess it's the health and wellbeing of our children and young people, and really to put a dollar on the health and wellbeing of our children and young people and their participation in sport, I would hope that this would not make a barrier to families being able to afford sport due to costs for clubs having to increase due to this, you know, implementation. But I absolutely do support that we need to do something about it. But I hope that it is staged, and I hope that it doesn't incur the cost too much impost on families and things like that. And the other only other thought I had was in regards to, say, if we're looking at the Tigers and the cricket clubs and the big clubs and the athletics club who's taking over the lease of the change rooms, who then will be looking at that facility and applying for funds and putting a lot of investment and some of their financial resources to the actual club rooms, like, that will be taken into consideration as well. So the money that then they say the Kingborough Lions or the Athletics Club donated, you know, 200,000 of their savings onto the facilities, will that be all taken into account as well regarding the whole sort of user pay system?
Through you, Mayor, absolutely. It's interesting, though, that I think the outdoor users actually have a lot more financial, a lot more capacity to generate revenue through their facilities, their kiosk, their bar. Indoor users don't actually have that capacity because that revenue is retained by council already. So I think the answer to your question is yes, we'll be taking into consideration everyone's individual position. But, you know, I think, as has already been alluded to, I think clubs understand that this is on its way. But, you know, I can't keep reinforcing we'll be fair and reasonable, and we'll, I guess the intent is to stage it in over a number of years.
Thank you very much for answering my questions.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about, at 4.5 it says that the sports ground user fee rates that are applied by other Greater Hobart councils are not based on any sophisticated model or policy, but they're generally based on recovering a small percentage of the total turf maintenance. I'm interested in getting maybe a ballpark figure around what percentage is reasonable.
That's a very good question, and we'll work through that process. I guess it's one of the important parts of the next stage of the process is to determine what's reasonable. The Kingborough Tigers and the Kingborough Knights, the AFL club and cricket club, they're around that little over 5% of the total cost recovery. So I think as time goes on, I know there's a number of mainland councils in particular who get up to around 20% of cost recovery on turf maintenance. And by the way, they wouldn't spend anywhere near the amount of time and effort and energy on turf maintenance as we do. So I'm not sure that we're going to get up to 20% of $1.3 million, which is the total cost. But I would anticipate somewhere between sort of that 5%, and we could potentially, over a long period of time, get to, say, 15%. That seems to be a sort of a reasonable figure, but it'll take some time. But 5% seems to be, you know, a starting point, I guess.
Thank you. That's a really helpful answer. And through you, Mayor, I'll just make the point that I really support what Councillor Midgley was alluding to with respect to the health and wellbeing benefits that particularly young people, but all people, receive from engaging in physical activity, and also the mental health benefits as well. And it really is about access and equity. And in this case, I think the most convincing argument for me is the disparity between what indoor sports have to go through versus what outdoor sports have to go through. But I'll just make the point that it's almost a system where just because indoor sports are suffering, I feel unjustly, you know, therefore, ipso facto, we should punish outdoor sports as well. I actually would like a situation ultimately where anybody, just by virtue of living in a wealthy nation at one of the wealthiest times in human history, that every child gets the opportunity to participate in indoor or outdoor sports without barriers to entry because it's cost prohibitive. So I am very cautious, actually, about these costs being basically passed on to the consumer, which will mean ultimately that yes, it will be some small saving for somebody that is paying their rates potentially on, you know, on the mansion by the beach, and instead that cost is then being passed on to some kid who doesn't now get to play sport because it costs a bit more than it used to. So I have those concerns, but ultimately probably the most convincing paragraph to me in the whole report is at 4.3, where it says, whilst it's acknowledged that there is some informal use of local ovals by the community, effectively what we're looking at here is that sporting clubs utilising council sports grounds are being subsidised to the tune of about $1.25 million annually. So that's a very convincing statement there that, you know, indoor clubs are paying, outdoor clubs aren't, and I can see that what we want to do is even up that inequality. But I just really want to reiterate that we want to bring down the price, actually, for all clubs, for the cost of people to participate in sport, because we will all receive the health and wellbeing dividends for being a society that is healthy and active. But with that cautious approach, I do think that we're heading in the right direction. I just think that we need to keep at the forefront of our mind the great value that the sports clubs are bringing to our communities. And as Councillor Midgley said, you know, you can't really put a dollar figure on that except to say that they're all, whether they're indoor or outdoor, they're all doing a terrific service for our community, and we support them for that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further contributions? Before I ask Councillor Gladewright to sum up, I just wanted to make a couple of comments. Firstly, thank you to Mr. Wade for the work that's gone into this report. I think that it does set out very clearly that this is a case about equity and the differences people have pointed out between indoor and outdoor sports. But I think key to the success of this is obviously going to be the consultation that we do embark on with the sporting clubs, and also hopefully an understanding by those clubs that they will need to manage things with their own registrations so that we don't have a situation where there are children who can no longer afford to play because registration fees have gone up or so on. I mean, I do know that there are, I think the state government has that ticket to play, I think it is, subsidy that is provided for low-income families. I know it's also automatically given to any child that's in foster care. They receive that as well. The charity that I do some work with, we do sports registrations for the children to assist them in maintaining their physical and mental health as well. So there are quite a few organisations and places that do that. So that's certainly important for us to bear in mind as well. But look, I look forward to us having this discussion. I think that there is certainly a significant case here that has been put forward to say we need to actually look at this and look at it seriously for equity. So thank you, Mr. Wade, for your work on this. And Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mayor. I just would like to say that we are a council happening here and now, and so I don't feel like there's any reason why this should be postponed till after the general election. But I do very much understand what a lot of councillors have touched on in regards to the staging of the fees, and I think we all are fairly in agreement that that's a good idea, that it's just an incremental staged approach to bringing in the fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. I'll put the recommendation now as printed on page 87. It was moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please raise your hands. In favour is Councillors Fox, Reet, Cordova, Gladewright, Watts, Westwood, Midgley, Bastone and Street. The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 88, sports ground user policy, with a recommendation on page 89. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This item follows on from our discussion that we've just had about sports ground fees. Our user policy was last reviewed and approved by Council in September 2020. It's now due for renewal again and review. And the recommendation is that given we are reviewing the re-establishment of sports ground user fees, that the current sports ground user policy continue in its current form with the review to occur after that sports ground user fee review has been presented to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Are there any further contributions or questions? No? If not, thank you very much. I will put the motion as printed on page 89, moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Is Councillors Fox, Reid, Cordova, Gladewright, Wass, Westwood, Midgley, Bastone and Street. The motion is carried unanimously. Moving now to page 94, I might hand over to you, Deputy Mayor, to chair this, as this was something that I was going to speak to.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us on page 94, item 16.5, Local Government Association of Tasmania General Meeting Motions. We open up to discussion to advise the Mayor regarding voting at the upcoming LGAT General Meeting. Do I have a mover or someone to discuss this? Thank you, Councillor Reid, and a seconder. I think it was Councillor Fox. Going by hands up, I'll hand over to you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor. This is just to get some guidance from councillors as to recommendations to how we should vote with the upcoming LGAT General Meeting that is being held on the 18th of March. My recommendation would be that with the five motions that are printed there, obviously one of them is ours in relation to fire bunkers, but the first four ones, I would suggest that we support those. So that would be my recommendation.
Thank you. I have Councillor Gladewright next with your hand up.
Yes, please. It just occurred to me that in the motion that we've put, it's talking about Kingborough being considered one of the most bushfire-prone municipalities, but do we need to change the wording to make that Tasmania being a bushfire-prone area?
Don't think we're able to change that now because it's already gone into LGAT. But when I speak to it, I'm happy to make that clarification.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Councillor Fox, you were next, but your hand is now down. Would you like to make a contribution?
Just that I totally agree with the Mayor. I feel we should support all of these, and they're all important and obvious that we should. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Same again. I support all five of them, so happy to proceed with that. Thank you.
Councillor Reid, would you like to sum up?
No, that's
before
fine.
Before you do.
Yes, Councillor Wass.
I wanted to say something, but I just can't get my hand up on the screen.
Okay.
I am a little bit concerned about the removal of fringe benefits tax for electric vehicles. The amount that that's going to be is going to be very insignificant. And I'm a bit disappointed that that's the way they've gone. I mean, they'll save that cost in power, as in petrol, rather. What they should be concentrating on and where I would be looking at probably trying to steer this is that we ought to be looking at bringing all people that are buying electric vehicles to have concessions as in stamp duty and other concessions Australia-wide. Now, that is starting to emerge, and Victoria about 2 years ago said, well, when they come in, then that, and they, as a consequence, increase the costs significantly for anyone buying an electric vehicle. I think we should be looking at the masses rather than a few businesses that may acquire this, but at the end of the day, it's an insignificant cost compared with the cost Australia-wide and all citizens in the country to go that way. So I would argue that it's probably insignificant and there would be a better one, and if the Mayor can probably convince others that maybe we should be looking at the wider scale rather than a very narrow focus, maybe that would give us a bit of clout, because I think it's time that we as in local government Australia-wide, said to the federal government, now it's time. It's gone past the use-by date. Vehicles are being made, manufactured. They can come into Australia and they'll come in tomorrow if you do the right thing and everyone wants to buy them.
Thank you, Councillor Woff. Just to double-check, anyone else with a contribution? I haven't got any hands up, but feel free to jump in if you're having trouble. Okay, with that, we have before us...
Sorry, I had quickly put my hand...
Sorry, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just in regards to what Councillor Woss said, I think that was important. I need to think and unpack it a bit more, and it was important points raised. So I'm just checking that he is stating that we shouldn't vote for that item. We should vote no, but we should argue a different point. I'm just trying to get some clarification, sorry, on his thinking.
Councillor Woss, would you like to clarify the purpose of your contribution?
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Westwood. I saw when I was talking that the Mayor was nodding, and I think she knew where I was coming from, and I would have thought that she agreed with me. Now, whether that's a delegate's discretion, that then gives her the right to be able to challenge and suggest that there's a bigger picture out there than a narrow focus one.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Do we go through each of these individually? Sorry, I haven't chaired this part of the meeting before. Or do we accept the recommendation that we agree to all of them?
Well, I think in light of that last conversation, it's agree to all of them, but with the FBT on electric vehicles, it's delegates' discretion, so that I can see if we can widen that motion to include removal of stamp duty for electric vehicles. And look, if that is unsuccessful, then obviously I'll still support the motion.
Okay, so just to clarify for those listening, the recommendation is that Council advise the Mayor regarding voting at the upcoming Local Government Association of Tasmania General Meeting as follows. Derelict and abandoned buildings, yes. Removal of fringe benefits tax for electric vehicles, delegates' discretion. Family and sexual violence prevention framework, yes. Differential rates for vacation rentals, yes. And fire bunkers, yes. All those in favour? We have Councillors Reet, Gladewright, Westwood, Bastone, Woss, Cordova, Fox, Street and Midgley. And the motion is carried unanimously. I'll hand back over to the Mayor, actually.
No, you're not.
I'll hand back over to the Mayor. I will retain the Chair for just a little bit longer. We have on page 103, a notice of motion from Councillor Reet regarding the installation of a fourth flagpole. Moved by Councillor Reet, do I have a seconder? Councillor Cordova. Councillor Reet.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I am moving this motion in response to numerous requests that we have had over many years to fly different flags at the council chambers to recognise particular commemorative days and events. And the difficulty that we have at the moment is that we only have three flagpoles, and it does mean that we have to remove one of the existing flags. So as people would be aware, we currently fly the Australian flag, the Tasmanian flag, and the Tasmanian Aboriginal flag. So in the event that a group would like us to fly a flag, such as happened last year for Legacy Week, when we flew the Legacy flag, we had to take down the flags. There is a significant amount of protocol I have discovered in relation to flying of flags. Our information officer, Mr. Malt, has there's a manual on flags, and things have to be abided by in a particular way. So this would solve the problem of needing to remove any of the flags that we currently have. And I think I know that the that we have been asked by many community groups if we would be amenable to this. We are, of course, wanting to treat them all equitably. I do know in particular that we've been asked if we would fly the rainbow flag at the Civic Centre during LGBTQI plus awareness days, and that's certainly something that I think that we should be in a position to be able to do. I don't know why we haven't put in another flagpole. It does come at a cost, and I was I must admit I was a little taken aback that a flagpole costs $5,000, and so then I was determined to find the funding, because I knew the question then would be, where are we getting the money from? And I was able to identify, you might recall that at the last meeting we had a report on the donations, and because there are not, because of the pandemic, there are not students and young people and others representing Tasmania interstate or overseas, there is a significant underspend there. And so I've identified that rather than having to wait until the next budget, that we are able to proceed with this with the money coming from that excess of funds, because we certainly still have over $13,000 available in that pool of money. So I look forward to members' contributions, and hopefully for us to be able to fly the flag, so to speak, for both the Rainbow Pride flag and other flags as requested. We will need to do a policy in relation to this and some guidelines, so that we can have an equitable and fair process, and that it's clear to people what they need to do in order to have their flag displayed. I'm assured by council staff that it's actually quite possible to have that policy back to us by the end of April. That's not me being an impatient Sagittarian. I'm told that's quite realistic, that we can actually have that work done. It's not, we'll take a leaf out of the book of some of the other flag policies rather than reinventing the wheel. So I didn't want to place the staff under any pressure for getting that done unrealistically, but I'm told that's achievable. And then hopefully it's a matter of getting the flagpole installed. So I look forward to members' contributions. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reet. Next I have Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This is a really positive positive move, and so I applaud the Mayor for taking the initiative to get this moving. The two points that I was going to raise have actually been covered already, which is that I think it's a really good use of that significant underspend that took place in the mayoral donations and the council policy donation space as a result of the pandemic, and so that there was going to be this significant underspend of, there's still $13,150 of available funds that were unlikely to get expended prior to the current financial year finishing. So I think it's a good use of those things, and I really look forward to the positive messages that will be being sent of community inclusivity and bringing people together. That's really such an important aspect of council, and one of the great pleasures of being on the council is to see that taking place. In terms of the policy itself, I was going to ask a question about it, but I think it's actually been outlined that we will receive that policy back maybe in April. But I guess that is obviously equally important to make sure that we know what, when and who are able to fly flags and for how long and what that represents and what message that sends as a council as well. So I look forward to seeing that policy and reviewing it, but congratulations again, and I look forward to this being implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Vastone.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, my worry is about what, who and when will fly flags on this other flagpole. Rainbow flag, yep, we all know what that is. We can go through the different things. Could be the UN flag. But, you know, what happens if some weird little group wants to fly their flag? How are we going to determine who is allowed to fly the flags on this one? Is it going to be only recognised flags that are well recognised, or is it going to be a free-for-all? I do have some concerns about this. So who is going to decide what flags are going to be flying?
Is a question maybe for Dr. Stevenson or Mr. Smee? Maybe Dr. Stevenson?
For you, Deputy Mayor, yes, the policies I've looked at from other councils are quite specific. So they have a list of flags that they pre-agree, and then they have some criteria around the vacant times, and they also include that the flag proponent must bear the cost of providing the flag and so forth. So there's some really good examples where councils have already put a lot of energy thinking through these issues, and I think we should be able to address that in the policy that comes back to council.
Thank you, Dr. Stevenson. Councillor Bastone, does that answer your query, and did you have anything else to add?
That answers my query, and I have nothing else to add. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Fox, I have you next.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have a question because I noticed that NIDOC is mentioned, and I do recall in the early 90s that Kingborough was one of the first councils to fly the Aboriginal flag, and we have got the third flag already for the Aboriginal flag, which I think flies permanently. And I'm just wondering why it needs to be mentioned again, or is that a separate flag to the Aboriginal flag?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. This was one that I took from someone else's policy, but it is a different flag. It's to celebrate NAIDOC Week. It's not the same as the current Aboriginal flag that we have up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Anything else to add? Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And just like to say a big thank you to the Mayor for acting so quickly on this, following a discussion we had where Dr. Stevenson and I met with the representatives from Rainbow Community TAS, Councillor Grace as well. Thank you very much. I was very surprised and happy to see this put to the agenda, because we have never been able to find budget to put something that is quite meaningful to many community groups. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. For my contribution, I echo the sentiments of my colleagues. I thank you, Councillor Reid, for putting this motion forward. I think it is well worth the $5,000 in terms of being inclusive and recognising diversity, and I will certainly be supporting your motion. Would you like to say anything in conclusion?
Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor, and thank you to my fellow councillors for their support with this. I think I hope there's not a shortage of flagpoles. I hope we can get this up very, very quickly have an opening of the flagpole. I opened a bus shelter the other day. I'd never opened a bus shelter before, and now I might open a flagpole, so we'll look forward to that. I'm not sure if it's like launching a ship and you smash a bottle of champagne over it, but I'm sure it'll be a cause of celebration. So thank you very much to members for that support.
look forward to coming to the opening of the flagpole. We have before us a notice of motion regarding the installation of a fourth flagpole, moved by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Have Councillors Reet, Fox, Street, Cordova, Gladewright, Westwood, Bastone, Wass and Midgley. And the motion is carried unanimously. And I will hand the chair back over to the Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor. We turn now to page 104. It's the confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, and Kingston Park commercial tenancy lease. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That's Councillors Fox, Reet, Cordova, Gladewright, Wass, Westwood, Midgley, Bastone. Councillor Street, are you putting your hand up? Yep. Just checking you're not an outlier there. Thank you. The motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Thank you very much to everyone who has been in attendance online tonight. We did go back online onto YouTube. Our apologies for our technical issues at the start, but we did recommence the meeting a little bit later on. So thank you. The open session of Council has adjourned at 7:10 p.m.